As the circle of people tightened around them, Rourke stepped beside Natalia. In his left hand, he carried the 800-round ammo box of 5.56-millimeter ball. In his right hand, he clenched the M16.
Who the hell are you people with that plane?
I work for the FAA, checking out rural airports.
Knock it off. Who are you?
I'm John. This is Natalie. Who the hell are you?
Morris Dombrowski, Combined Counties Resistance Fighters.
Ah, then relax. We're on the same side.
A woman stepped into view near the corrugated metal building's door.
I've seen her. She's the one who was always with the general. The one in the fur coat. Maybe his slut or something.
Natalia wheeled toward her, but Rourke stepped between the two women.
No!
I'm not his woman. I'm his niece.
Oh, shit.
Russians? Fucking commies?
Rourke turned to face Morris Dombrowski again. Another woman joined the first now.
She was with that bastard who used to run the KGB. Maybe she's his woman.
I was his wife, and he's dead. He was a butcher.
My name's John Rourke. If you're resistance like you say you are, you must know Colonel Reed. Get in touch with him at US 2 headquarters. He can vouch for us both.
Why?
The woman from the corrugated building walked toward them, holding a pistol, some kind of double-action revolver with a barrel that looked too long to be comfortably carried.
So you can get your commie friends to get a fix on our radio, or maybe get a fix on US 2? Fucking rotten hell, mister.
It's not mister, it's doctor. He's a doctor of medicine, and I'm a major in the KGB. But if the KGB were to find me, they'd likely kill me. General Varakov. He is my uncle, and we go to see him. He is helping to fight the KGB.
You're crazy, lady. And if this guy's a doctor, then he's probably your psychiatrist.
Then I am crazy enough to kill you. It is not Natalie. My name is Natalia Anastasia Tiamarovna, Major, Committee for State Security of the Soviet. I have told the truth.
Natalia raised her M16 in both hands, her legs spread wide apart, the muzzle of the rifle aimed at the woman with the long-barreled revolver.
Contact Colonel Reed, and take a look at this. I'll move slowly.
Rourke reached to Natalia's right holster, opening the flap there. The M16 swung free on its sling. He flashed the CAR-15 across his back. He set down the ammo box and took the second revolver from the holster on Natalia's left hip. He looked toward the crowd of resistance fighters, then rolled both revolvers in his hands, butts forward. He walked slowly toward the woman with the long-barreled revolver. The woman looked down at his hands. Rourke could feel Natalia's eyes boring into him. Rourke stopped less than 2 feet from the woman with the long-barreled revolver. She was evidently one of the leaders, but not the first in command, he guessed. Rourke held the perfectly matched .357's butts forward, showing the woman the twin revolvers.
The American Eagle on the barrel flat here, or the revolver in my left hand? They were made for Sam Chambers by a guy named Ron Mahovsky, a company called Metalife Industries. Mahovsky, before the night of the war, he was one of the top revolver smiths in the country. Sam Chambers gave these revolvers to her, to Natalia, because he didn't have a medal to give her. When the quake hit Florida, you heard about that?
The woman nodded.
If it hadn't been for the Major, thousands more of American lives would have been lost. And President Chambers knew that. Take a look at these yourself.
Rourke held the revolvers out toward the woman, butts presented toward her.
And be careful, ma'am. They're loaded.
His eyes watched the woman's eyes. She looked at the guns Rourke offered her, at her own revolver, just a .38 special. The woman slid the gun into a too small holster on her right thigh, the bottom of the holster cut out, 2 inches of barrel protruding through it. She started to reach toward Rourke for both revolvers at once. He'd seen his cowboy heroes do it in countless movies when he'd been a boy. He'd practiced the trick with single-action semi-autos. His trigger fingers edged into the trigger guards. He let the revolvers roll inward away from his palms and snapped his hands up, the revolvers twirling on the trigger guards, both gun butts dropping into his fists.
Hey!
Rourke moved beside the woman, slightly behind her, the pistol in his left hand, its muzzle finding the underside of her chin, ramming up against the flesh. The gun in his right hand, at the side of her body, pointed at the man with the Mini 14, Morris Dombrowski. Natalia had wheeled, her M16 pointed toward the resistance fighters who had come from the far side of the field.
She gets it first, and then you, Dombrowski. I'm telling the truth. So's the Major. Take us to resistance headquarters and a radio, and Reed or Chambers himself will back us up.
You telling us that you've got some kind of mission that US 2 sent you out here?
US 2 didn't send us. My uncle sent for us. But he's a decent man. Something has gone wrong. Something wrong for all of us. And he thinks that Dr. Rourke and I can do something to stop it. That is why we came here.
And we could use your help, the Resistance help, getting into the city to get to him.
You want us to help you reach General Varikov?
It's the only way. Now, what's it gonna be? We all shoot each other here and now for nothing? Or do you check out our story?
Throw your guns down, then.
We keep our guns. No other way.
Put your guns away, but keep an eye on both of them. We're going to the base.
Rourke had been wrong. It was the woman who was the leader of this group. Her hands came up, touched at the barrel of the revolver under her chin, and gently, slowly moved it aside. Rourke let go of her, and the woman turned to face him.
I'm Emily Bronkowitz. Our leader was killed 3 weeks ago. I was his wife. I'm the leader now. Stay with us, close, or we'll open fire.
And her eyes drifted to the revolver in Rourke's left hand, the gun held diagonally away from him.
You were right about the American Eagle. But now let's see if the guns were really a gift. And if you're telling the truth, we'll help you if we can. If you're not, then go ahead and shoot me when you want to. But there's enough of us to get both of you.
Rourke lowered the hammers on both revolvers. He walked past the woman to give Natalia her guns back.
Don't bet on that last part.
The base to which Emily Bronkowitz had referred was, at first glance, a cave dug out of a sloping hillside. Rourke and Natalia were in the middle of the resistance group, walking stooped over through the cave, following a flashlight beam. There was a brighter light ahead. The tunnel stopped abruptly, and Rourke could stand to his full height. Natalia rubbed the small of her back with her hands as she straightened up. The tunnel had ended in a building, a structure largely concrete with heavily shuttered high windows, or at least Rourke assumed them to be windows, and double steel doors at the far end. The building seemed nearly a perfect square. Drill presses, dust-covered, and lathes and other machinery in evidence, as though pushed aside into corners of the building, the floor oil-stained in spots, large patches of it gummy-looking. Rourke and Natalia followed Emily Bronkowitz across the floor, diagonally toward a cubicle-style office at the height of a dozen or so stairs that overlooked the main floor. Rourke surmised that it had once been a plant manager's office, the place apparently at one time a machine shop. Its exact nature was hard to determine. Others of the resistance broke off before reaching the stairs. Rourke and Natalia continued to follow Emily Bronkowitz. She started up the steps, Natalia immediately behind her, Rourke following Natalia, Dombrowski, and two other men behind Rourke. Emily paused at the office door. Natalia followed her inside, Rourke after Natalia, only Dombrowski coming inside after Rourke. Emily perched herself on the front edge of a gray metal desk at the rear of the office. Natalia remained standing. Rourke shrugged, sitting down in the metal interview chair.
So, where's the radio?
I'm a Pole, Dr. Rourke, if that's your real name.
Well, it's really Rorovich, and I'm a spy.
Emily looked at him, but didn't smile.
I hate the Russians. I hated them before the night of the war for what they did in Poland. My oldest son... He was 13. He got killed fighting the Russians. My husband just died doing the same thing. My daughter's in such a bad way that she won't even talk. She's 17. A drunken Soviet soldier raped her. She caught something from him, some kind of disease. But we don't even have penicillin to fight it. My mother and father lived in Chicago. They died during the neutron bombing on the night of the war. My husband's older brother was arrested and hauled away to a forced labor camp.
A factory. It would have been a factory. There are no forced labor camps here. But the laborers at the factories are not allowed to leave, so it is like a camp. They are fed well. It was my uncle who insisted that they work in 8-hour shifts only and be treated decently.
Is that your excuse?
It is not an excuse. It is merely the truth.
They made him a slave. That's simple enough to understand. He has to work for them and he can't come back. I don't know where he is, or even if he's still alive.
What are you trying to say?
Out there in the airfield, you could have killed me. But I don't matter much no more anyway. But I've still got all my people outside. If I don't step outside with you two following me, you'll never get out of here alive. First gunshot they hear, they'll be ready. And if I don't come out, they'll come in and shoot the walls out of the office here if they have to, just to kill you both. Yeah, out there you could have killed a lot of us. But in here, there's no such luck for you or the rest of the commies.
Morris Dombrowski swept the muzzle of his Mini-14 up fast. Rourke started to move as Natalia's right hand flashed across her body, the silenced stainless Walther in her right fist. Rourke shifted direction, going for Emily Bronkowitz. His right hand bunched into a fist, flashing out toward her jaw as he came out of the chair. It was a light tap to throw her off balance. His left hand reached out across her body, blocking her right arm as she tried to draw her long-barreled revolver. Rourke's hand moved up to cover her mouth.
What do you think you...
Shh! Rourke had the Bronkowitz woman supporting her from falling off the desk, her revolver out of the leather in his left fist, and pointed at the woman. Rourke watched as her eyelids fluttered.
I could just as easily have killed you, Mr. Dombrowski. But I only shot you in the right forearm. That will heal.
You'll never get away with this.
Shh!
The door to the office started opening. Natalia sidestepped, and Rourke leaned Emily Bronkowitz back roughly across the desk. He was beside the door in two strides. The first man came through the doorway. Rourke hammered down with the barrel of the ungainly-sized M&P revolver. Rourke started for the second man, his shotgun starting to swing on target. There was a flash of something catching light as it moved. The man's mouth opened, but nothing came out as his eyes shifted right fast. Rourke stepped into the man, shoving the riot shotgun's muzzle hard to the man's right. Rourke's right fist to the man's jaw snapped the head back. He caught the body as it sagged, then glanced once at Natalia. Her stainless, silenced PPKS shifted into her left hand. He looked at the door. The man's right arm was pinned there by the balisong. The handle slabs opened and spread. The Weehawk pattern blade penetrated through the leather of the man's jacket and into the soft wood of the door. Rourke wrenched the knife free, then dragged the body through the doorway. Natalia eased the door closed.
You throw a good knife, Natalia.
He closed the balisong and tossed it back to her. She caught it and put it into a pocket of her black jumpsuit.
Pacific Cutlery made a good knife. All I did was practice a lot.
You two commies, quit congratulating yourselves. You ain't never getting out of here alive.
Rourke looked again at Dombrowski. He picked up the man's Mini-14 from the floor. He examined the gun. Stainless steel, factory folding stock, factory 20-round magazine in place. He turned the gun around and handed it to Dombrowski.
If we're here to do you harm, why haven't we killed any of you? Natalia's shot could have put out your lights. Natalia's knife could have killed the man at the doorway. Now how come, huh? How come enemy agents and we don't like to kill? That makes sense to you? Now where's the goddamn radio, Dombrowski? Call US-2 and we can quit this idiocy.
We don't have no radio here.
Those are Kalashnikovs. Some of my people. Perhaps the plane was spotted.
Fucking comic trick!
Emily. What you said made sense. We can talk later. Let's get the hell out of here now.
Natalia returned the Walther to its shoulder rig, both revolvers in her hands, the M16s hanging from her sides.
I can't kill my own.
Hit the floor!
The doors had been blown through. Rourke rolled and was up, his M16 coming into his hands. Natalia, beside the desk, was helping Emily Bronkowitz to stand. Glass covered the desk, and Emily's left arm was slashed.
Do what you can to stop the bleeding.
Opening the door, he recognized the uniforms, but more important, the technique. Men poured through the blasted open doorways now, green shoulder boards on their brown uniforms. They were KGB. The resistance on the ground level of the machine shop were holding them for the moment near the blown-out doors.
Let's get out of here! Down the steps! Fast!
Rourke jumped through the doorway. Dombrowski was behind him, half-dragging the semi-conscious man Rourke had decked in the doorway. Rourke looked back at Natalia and Emily Bronkowitz. Emily's arm was bandaged with a shirt sleeve. She was helping the man Rourke had cold-cocked with the barrel of the revolver back in Emily's right fist. Natalia's one revolver was holstered, but her left hand still held one as she shouldered half the weight of the man. Rourke rammed the muzzle of his M16 forward, throwing the assault rifle to his shoulder, aiming down the stairs toward the KGB invaders. As he started down the steps, the invaders took notice. Rourke checked behind him quickly, then focused on the KGB invaders again. The knot of men beside the blown open steel doors was thinning as they drew back. He spotted an officer.
It is Tiamarovna. Kill her!
Down! Down, Natalia!
The Soviet officer was leading a group of a half dozen men. They had broken through the resistance fighters and were charging the staircase. The officer was holding a pistol. The six men with him had AKMs. Rourke let the M16 fall to his side on its sling as he took the stairs down two at a time, both Detonix pistols coming into his hands. He aimed toward the center of mass of the charging KGB officer. Four AKs were turning on him. Rourke took a half step back, his pistols raised. Natalia was above him on the stairs, holding her M16 toward the men. Three of the Soviet soldiers were down. Rourke emptied his pistols at the remaining three men. The last three men were down. Rourke jammed both pistols into his belt, grabbing the Colt MK4 already there, jacking back the slide. He looked up the steps toward Natalia, and beside her, Dombrowski. And Emily Bronkowitz was staring at her. Natalia's face was ashen. He read it in her eyes. She had killed her own. He turned away from the dissipating knot of KGB troops.
These two are on our side! Make a run for the tunnel, quick!
Rourke covered Emily, Dombrowski, and the other men as they descended the stairs. It was almost like moving someone in a trance as he half-dragged Natalia toward the tunnel.
Hurry!
As they stepped into the tunnel, Emily Bronkowitz reached into her bag.
This'll stop the bastards, but good! Dynamite and plenty of it! Blow the whole damn place down on their fucking heads!
KGB men were everywhere on the floor of the machine shop. Rourke divided his attention between the men and reloading his guns.
You all right, Natalia?
Yes. I just never thought it would come to this. They had orders to kill me. Why kill me? Why kill me?
Rourke looked at her. It was impossible for him to imagine Natalia hysterical, but she was near hysterics.
I don't know. Maybe they found out some things. Maybe your uncle did some things, and we won't know until we try to reach him.
Try!
Rourke saw it in her eyes. Fear. Hatred. She raised her M16 at the advancing brown-uniformed KGB. The weapon was shot out.
The fuse! It's out!
Rourke charged back a few yards down the tunnel toward Emily.
Where's the dynamite?
Out there! Back inside the mess of machinery!
She gestured toward the drill presses and lathes Rourke had seen shoved aside earlier. Natalia was beside Rourke. Rourke shifted his box of 223 to the tunnel floor, staring through into the machine shop toward the piled-up machinery and the dynamite there. He couldn't see it to shoot at it, nor could he see where the fuse had stopped burning.
Mrs. Bronkowitz, take this box of ammo with you. If Natalia and I get out of here, we'll need it.
And he looked at Natalia.
Cover me! I'm going for the dynamite!
Don't kill yourself! That's fine, but I'm coming with you.
Damn it!
Rourke shifted his M16 forward.
Emily, lay down some covering fire for us until we get up there. Then run like hell.
Rourke started into the machine shop, running in a long-strided, low-silhouetted lope, his M16 in one hand, his scoped CAR-15 in the other. Natalia was running beside him, an M16 in each hand. There were two dozen assault rifles firing at them. Rourke felt something tear at the sling of the M16, but he made it. He kept running, still holding both the M16 and the CAR-15. Natalia was ahead of him now, hidden in the mass of abandoned machinery. Rourke dove down beside her as the CAR-15 ran dry. He snatched one of the thin, dark tobacco cigars from the left breast pocket of his blue chambray shirt under the battered brown bomber jacket. He lit the cigar in the flame of the Zippo.
Bad for your health.
Yeah. Worse for theirs.
Rourke reloaded the M16, then the CAR-15. He left the safeties off and searched the pile of machinery, looking for the dynamite.
There, the fuse!
Rourke looked to her eyes, tracked them, found the thin gray-white line of fuse running along the wall above their heads. He tracked it forward, the fuse disappearing into the pile of machinery. He shoved aside a small metal platform. There was a cardboard box visible at the end of the fuse. He backtracked the fuse. It had been cut, perhaps by a bullet. A chunk of the concrete wall dimpled there, midway between the sewer pipe opening into the tunnel and the machinery beside which he hid. There was barely 8 feet of fuse within his reach.
What are we going to do? They're closing in!
Rourke nodded, saying nothing, trying to think.
If I pull down that fuse, I'll rip it out, maybe. And if I light it from here, we'll never make it through the tunnel before it blows. I gotta get up there along the wall, near those shuttered windows, and then light the damn thing.
You'll be killed! Nobody could miss a target your size profiled against the wall!
A target my size? Well, thanks a lot.
He grinned at her, then shifted off the M16, leaving the scoped CAR-15, his personal weapon in more battles than he wanted to remember, slung across his back. He handed Natalia the M16.
Three of them now! Just keep pumping lead toward those guys and keep me covered! Once I get that fuse lit, give me a good loud scream and shout something about dynamite, then run like the devil's chasing you for the tunnel!
She leaned toward him, quickly, taking the cigar from his mouth, moving toward his lips.
If we live, I don't know what will happen to us, but I love you, John Rourke.
He looked at her. Women pick the craziest time for things, he thought. Or maybe they didn't at all.
I love you too! I couldn't help it! And I'll always love you! Now start shooting!
Rourke took back his cigar, looked at her once, then shot a glance toward the KGB out beside the blown-open metal doors, running for the near wall across the length of the machine shop. There were crates there, and if they didn't collapse under his weight, he could stretch and just maybe reach the fuse. And he did what he had told Natalia to do. Natalia fired out the entire magazine, zigzagging the muzzle over the positions of the KGB unit. She dropped the empty assault rifle and picked up another. She fired three round bursts as heads raised from the cover of the machine shop equipment. An invader blew back, his green shoulder board ripped from his uniform tunic. Another burst sliced across the neck of an enlisted man. Yet another burst cut the legs out from under an officer climbing over a packing crate, starting toward her across the no man's land between them. A slightly longer blast claimed three heads in a rough diagonal from jawline to left eyeball. A marksman with an AKM, an enlisted man, leveled his rifle at Rourke. She guessed, no time to look, to confirm that the burst the man had gotten off hadn't killed the man she had loved since first seeing, the man she would always love. She aimed at two men staring over some of the packing crates. Worried the machinery around her would explode, she pulled back. She changed the partially spent magazine in the rifle she held. She then reached out for the fired-out M16, the metal hot as the back of her left hand inadvertently brushed against the barrel. She looked across the machine shop toward Rourke. He had taken cover near the packing crates beneath a faint thread of dynamite fuse. Three rifles loaded and ready, Natalia rammed one of the M16s up over the lathes and machinery around her, aiming it blindly. She was careful not to use the same weapon she'd used the first time, lest she burn out the barrel. She rolled left, picking up another fresh-loaded M16 in her hands. She held it again toward the KGB position. She caught another man in the groin, then again in the chest. She kept firing, glancing to her right. Rourke was climbing the packing crates, gunfire hammering into the wall on both sides of it. Natalia burned out the magazine in the M16. She snatched up the third rifle, aiming it again into the KGB position. Two more of the KGB unit rushed through the blown-apart doors. One man carried what she recognized as a 7.62 PK general-purpose machine gun. It fired the Type 54R cartridge, and although the same caliber as standard Soviet service weapons and utilizing the Kalashnikov rotating bolt, the cartridge was vastly more powerful. And from the size of the field green box beneath the receiver, she realized it carried either a 200 or 250 round link belt. She aimed her M16 toward the two-man machine gun crew. She dropped the gunner's assistant, but the machine gunner made it to cover.
John! Machine gun!
She swapped magazines for all three rifles. He was lighting the fuse with the glowing tip of his cigar. She could see him as if in freeze frame. And then the machine gun opened up. Her heart stopped as the packing crates were shot out from under him and Rourke tumbled to the floor. One M16 was slung under her right arm now as she stood. She aimed the other two M16s, one in each hand, at the man as she emerged from cover, moving toward Rourke. The machine gun was chewing into the wall behind her, chewing into the concrete flooring beneath her as she kept firing.
I'm all right!
She kept firing, crossing the floor of the machine shop. Natalia let both weapons drop on their slings, swinging forward the third assault rifle. She was beside Rourke now. He was holding his own CAR-15.
Natalia, run with me!
She would run with him forever if he chose it. Rourke pulled both detonics out as he started to sprint toward the tunnel mouth. Natalia was beside him. Both detonics' pistols were empty as they reached the tunnel mouth. Rourke shoved Natalia ahead of him, then jumped after her, hitting the dirt surface of the tunnel floor hard. They crawled inside on their knees and elbows across the ground as the machine gun fired. He looked up at Natalia. She was changing sticks for all three M16s. He rammed both detonics pistols into his belt, then took one of the M16s from her.
That fuse is lit. Maybe a minute.
I know. Run like hell.
Yeah, you got it.
And she was up, stooped over, but running. Rourke aimed the M16 through the tunnel mouth once more. Then he too started running. The Soviets would be following if they hadn't noticed the fuse, and if they shot down the straight line of the tunnel, he and Natalia would be slaughtered. He shoved Natalia down ahead of him, throwing his body over hers as bullets tore into the dirt and rock walls of the small tunnel. He burrowed his body even more across hers, his chest over her head, his hands going to his ears. Rourke pushed himself up, dragging Natalia to her feet and shoving her ahead. He looked back once more. There was a wall of flames behind him. The KGB unit behind them, unless some had run for safety through the blown-out steel doors, would all be dead. Where the dynamite had been situated, it would have torn the machinery to bits, then propelled it in a wave of shrapnel that would have destroyed anyone in its path. Rourke kept running. They were safe, at least until they reached the end of the tunnel and came through the mouth of the small cave. At least until then. The womb had been reformed now, to suit the needs of Rozhdestvensky's orders and his plans. It was no longer recognizable as NORAD headquarters. What had once been offices had been converted into a huge laboratory, and Rozhdestvensky, the conversion complete, did not this time supervise or observe from behind glass. He stood in the laboratory. He watched the bluish glow of the almost luminescent gas that filled one of the 12 American chambers he had found. He turned to Professor Slavsky.
How long before we will know, Doctor?
You must realize, Comrade Colonel, we could never know with full certainty until the actual event takes place. But the serum seems to have produced the desired effect. Yet, some of the types of serum with which Soviet scientists experimented also seemed to have the desired effect, initially. It was not until the period of experimentation was concluded that we realized the serum had failed in one aspect or another.
So there is no certainty.
According to the data you have provided, comrade, it seems that scientists both within and outside the NASA establishment worked with the serum, and that the desired results were achieved. I do not doubt the validity of these reports or the sincerity of the research, but you must appreciate something.
Anzlovsky, gray-haired, stroked his small gray-black spade beard, his dark eyes staring past Rozhdestvensky, then taking on a peculiar light as he walked away toward the nearest of the chambers, the one that had been activated.
An example, comrade. Do you smoke cigarettes? You do, I believe.
Yes, I smoke cigarettes.
That is excellent. Not for your health, certainly, but for the sake of understanding. And this will illustrate the scientific dilemma in which we find ourselves. Now, at the earliest stages of research to discover a link between cigarette smoking and certain diseases, a critical factor is involved: time. If prolonged smoking, say for a period of 20 years, is needed to produce symptoms in a sufficient number of cases, what is a scientist to do? We have no time machines. We have no way of bending time to our will. So, the process of cigarette smoking in laboratory animals was accelerated to approximate the effect of time. Now...
He stroked the top of the blue glowing chamber.
With our experiment, there was not even the possibility of acceleration. We are at the mercy of real time here. And there is no way to give positive results that will ease your mind, comrade, until the actual experiment has been performed. So, either we won't know for 500 years, approximately, or...
His dark eyes gleamed, their corners crinkling with something Rozhdestvensky could only interpret as possible laughter.
We will never know.
Rozhdestvensky studied the glowing chamber, the swirling gases contained inside.
And what of the volunteer? When shall we know something?
Again, the longer we can wait, the greater fraction of experimental validity we shall have. I could terminate the experiment now, after only a few hours. I can wait for days. The results might well be a bit more meaningful after a few days' duration than only a few hours. No matter what the outcome, he is a volunteer. He knew what he was volunteering for.
Regardless of the outcome, he shall receive decoration as a hero of the Soviet Union.
I have serious doubts, Comrade Colonel, whether the receipt of such an honor will impress our volunteer greatly, if at all, should the experiment prove to be unsuccessful. But do not despair. For I understand from discussions with some of my colleagues here that in the event of failure, the womb can be hermetically sealed.
It will be at any event.
Rozhdestvenskiy realized his palms were sweating with nervousness.
Quite. The oxygen-carbon dioxide interchange would be of sufficient volume, and with the hydroponic gardens that have been planted, we shall endure regardless.
To live like mortals? To live less than human existences? What does it matter to be masters of a lifeless world, To never see the sun?
Become a colonel. There are other avenues of endeavor besides the acquisition of power, are there not?
Yes. The preservation of power.
If Rozhdestvenskiy had not denounced all belief in God, he would have prayed then for the experiment to succeed. Rourke had been there before, lectured there once to more than 100 police officers. Before the night of the war, it had been a public shooting range and gun shop. Before that, a skating rink. The sign had fallen, was gone, but he knew the place anyway. It was the Waukegan Outdoor Sportsman. He stopped at the rear metal door, and Emily tapped out some sort of code. A peephole had been cut in the steel door, and Rourke saw a tiny shaft of light in the gathering darkness. It was near sunset when the peephole opened, and then the peephole closed. The door opened. Emily stepped through, Rourke going ahead of Natalia, following Emily. As he glanced back quickly, Dombrowski and two other men following after. A black heavy curtain was ripped back, and beyond the curtain burned dim ceiling lights. In a far corner of what had apparently been a shipping area, he made out the generator. He could smell its fumes. It was cold in the building, and he followed Emily past new faces, eyes staring at them. Rourke tried smiling. No one smiled back. He slowed his pace, walking in step with Natalia now.
Let me do the talking, please.
She looked at him. Her blue eyes flashed, but she nodded, blinking them closed for an instant. It was like the light flickered out of the world when she closed them, he thought. They passed through a storage area. There were weapons of all descriptions on tables and on the floors, most disassembled. Reloading presses were in operation, children attending them. As they walked on, two men appeared, one older, one young, both going to one of the tables, commencing to work on one of the firearms there. They then passed into what Rourke remembered had been the sales floor of the retail store. It was now a hospital, apparently.
Emily, how many people have been treated here?
Maybe 1,000 since the night of the war. We have some real doctors, and we have a lot of volunteers. Some of the tougher cases, well, they can't do anything for them. My husband, he was one of them.
And her eyes flickered to Natalia, but this time the woman smiled. The woman started up a flight of stairs, and Rourke went ahead of Natalia again, following Emily. As they climbed the stairs, he could overlook the vast square footage. He estimated more than 100 beds in use, crammed together with barely enough room to walk between. Though most were called beds, few actually were. Most were mats or packing boxes. The woman turned down a small corridor, past open office doors. Men were inside the offices. As they walked, languid faces would sometimes look up, but they always turned away quickly. She stopped at the last office, the door open. A man perhaps Rourke's own age, perhaps a little younger, looked up from a paper-littered desk. His face lit up with a smile beneath his close-cropped, light-colored, curly hair. His eyes seemed to radiate a good humor Rourke had seen in none of the other men or women of the local resistance. He then remembered the man.
It's Mouse, isn't it?
Tom Mouse.
The man rose from his seat, extending his right hand. Rourke took it.
And you're John Rourke, right? The MD you taught survivalism and weapons training? I remember the presentation you gave.
That's right.
He watched Mouse's eyes as they took in Natalia.
And you, miss. I know your face, too. It's Major T.M. Rorovnov, the KGB. Mistress, or maybe the wife of Karamazov before he was killed.
Wife.
I guess that's kind of a negative way to start a conversation, though, isn't it? I didn't mean anything by it. Before the war, I used to think I was busy. Reserves, running the shop here, the wholesaling business. Hell, I wish I had that much free time now. I get a little testy when I'm tired. Why don't we all sit down?
Rourke looked at Natalia. Her face seemed to show that she had relaxed, if only a little.
Emily.
Tom.
Good to see you're still alive.
I'm glad to be alive.
As Emily went back to her duties, Mouse grinned at Rourke.
Her husband was one of the best field people I had, and she's better. But I still miss him. I'd offer you coffee, but I don't like poisoning people. And a pop machine never worked that well before the night of the war. And anyway, we ran out of pop.
We're fine.
I know a lot about you, Major Tiamarovna. Heard through US 2 all the scuttlebutt about what you did in Florida during the quakes. And I also know through our sources, we have some spies who take a lot of risks and sometimes get us pretty good information. So I know that the KGB has you on some kind of hit list once you're dead. Why, I don't know. So.
Mouse looked at Rourke then.
Like I said, nothing I like better than renewing old acquaintances, but I've got a field hospital to run, a weapons repair shop, a reloading operation.
What's where the range used to be? More beds?
No. Since it's soundproofed, we use it as a training area, a testing area for the weapons we repair. Everything it needs to be used for, and a few other things besides. But like I said, if I had 12 hands, I still wouldn't have a thumb to twiddle. So why are you both here? Something for US 2 or what?
Rourke shrugged, looking at Natalia.
You explain it. All of it. We can trust this man.
Natalia's eyes seemed to look into his soul, Rourke thought. But then she turned to look at Mouse.
My uncle is General Varakov, the Supreme Commander, and he needs us.
I sort of figured he was some kind of relative of yours. Go ahead.
Gradually, Natalia told Tom Mouse everything. The hospital that occupied the sales floor of Waukegan Outdoor Sportsman, and had, almost since the night of the war, was known to the Soviet authorities. General Varakov periodically sent teams of Soviet doctors into the hospital to help however they could, and what little medical supplies could be spared were sent as well. The plans were simple. When Soviet patrols were in the area, or an inspection was due, or the medical team was to be sent, the beds were spread out into the range area, and the weapons and reloading equipment hidden in an underground area left from an old storm drain. It was risky business, Rourke knew, the timing critical, a gap in information potentially fatal. If the underground storage area were discovered, or the equipment not gotten away in time, or the beds not spread out in time, there would be a firing squad. Even General Varakov would have no other choice, Rourke realized. And Mouse was risking his entire operation now. He had provided Rourke with medical credentials and Natalia as well, medical credentials that would serve as travel permits. And he had loaned them an automobile, the kind of loan Rourke knew Mouse had realized would never be returned. Rourke's false identity listed him as Peter Masters, a dead resistance fighter in reality, but on paper a hospital volunteer with little medical background. To have listed Rourke as an MD would have been suicidal. All medical doctors were registered with Soviet headquarters. Natalia was listed as Marianne Klein, another volunteer. The travel request, Mouse had signed it as administrator of the de facto hospital, indicated they were en route to the Soviet Mobile Surgical Unit stationed at Soldiers Field Stadium to request a fresh supply of hypodermic syringes. Mouse had used the system before for the actual procurement of medical supplies and to cover covert operations of his resistance command. Somewhat the statistician, Mouse had predicted odds of 3-1 that the travel documents would get them through, at least as far as the stadium. And medical emergency was the only even remotely justified purpose for nighttime travel. They had passed the Belvedere Road checkpoint, leaving Waukegan. No difficulties there, Rourke driving. They had passed two checkpoints along what had been the Illinois Tollway. No difficulties there either. The checkpoint on the Edens Expressway had been something both Rourke and Natalia had sweated, Rourke watching her eyes as the Soviet officer in charge of the checkpoint had been summoned to examine their travel documents. But they had been allowed to move on their way. Their risk was doubly great. Concealed in a hidden compartment of what had been the gas tank, accessible by going through the firewall from inside or outside of the trunk of the vintage Ford LTD, were their weapons and gear. Should these be discovered, it would mean instant death. To compensate for the Ford's reduced gasoline tank, an auxiliary tank had been rigged partially under the rear seat. Rourke wouldn't have wanted to have been in the car in case of high-speed impact, he had decided. The checkpoint leaving the Edens and entering the Kennedy Expressway had been almost too simple. They had proceeded. There was a long line of military vehicles ahead of them as they came within the boundaries of what had been the Chicago Loop, the downtown shopping and business district. Natalia had described what it had been like there after the night of the war. Wild dog packs, which had come in from outside the neutron bomb area, roving gangs of thugs who lived like rats beneath the once great department stores and in the abandoned subway tunnels. Soviet troops would chase after them, but for the most part, this urban equivalent of brigands would vanish before the soldiers could close with them. The urban brigands were armed with everything from stolen Soviet assault rifles to clubs, some of the bands resorting to the behavior of beasts. They sat now, the engine running, the LTD waiting to pull through the checkpoint.
This checkpoint is staffed by KGB, and the army too, but the main staffing is a KGB unit.
You think they'll recognize you?
I could only do so much, putting my hair up under this.
Rourke looked at her as she gestured to the scarf covering her hair.
And these glasses?
Mouse had given her the glasses of a dead woman who had expired at the hospital. The woman had been farsighted, and Natalia had had trouble walking when she wore them to the car. It was the reason Rourke drove, and had not shared the long run with her.
And your face? It is known to many of the KGB.
Rourke wore a hat borrowed from the supply of old clothing kept at the resistance headquarters. An old fedora, gray, stained. It matched the overcoat he wore.
What are you getting at?
Rourke was beginning to worry the car might overheat. He advanced another car length toward the checkpoint. He had spent a good amount of time in Chicago before the night of the war, learned the streets. The checkpoint was at the near side of the tunnel near Hubbard Street.
I don't know, but maybe we should make a break for it.
Rourke looked around them, not answering Natalia. A troop truck flanked them on the left, an M72 motorcycle sidecar combination on the right.
Where do you suggest we go? Up?
Wish that we could.
She was nervous, he realized. Perhaps it was, in part, just the very fact of being in Chicago, Soviet headquarters so near, KGB everywhere.
If they spot us at all, it won't be until we reach the checkpoint gate. And if it happens there, we can make a break for it then. If we do, ditch those glasses so you can see and rip out the back seat so you can get to that panel inside the truck and get at the weapons.
And then Rourke smiled, looking at her with the scarf covering her hair and the tattered raincoat that all but obscured her figure.
And if we do make a break for it, get rid of that scarf and that coat. If we wind up dying, I want to at least have something pretty to look at while I can still look.
She smiled, then very quickly, as if someone might see, leaned across the front seat, across the space separating them, to kiss him on the cheek. The checkpoint was at what, before the war, had sometimes been called Hubbard's Cave. Rourke eased the old LTD to the gate that blocked his lane. A green-shouldered, bearded KGB non-com approached the car.
Civilian traffic is expressly forbidden after sunset.
Rourke smiled his warmest smile.
Except for medical emergencies, right?
He passed the man his papers. The man unfolded the letter Mouse had signed as director of the civilian hospital in the converted gun shop and shooting range.
Hypodermic
needles. Hypodermic needles. Can't give shots with dirty needles. Hepatitis, stuff like that.
The man unfolded Rourke's identity papers, looking at Rourke, apparently trying to match the physical description with the face. It should match, he thought. The forger had been looking at his face while counterfeiting the identity papers.
And her?
Rourke turned to look at Natalia. Fear was written across her face so that a blind man could almost have known it, he thought. She handed him her papers from the battered brown vinyl purse that had come with the old raincoat. Rourke passed them over to the KGB non-com.
Here you go. Say, look, we got a lot of sick people here that need needles, the hypodermics.
There had been one other risk for Mouse, that if they were discovered and traced back to the hospital, there would be a raid and the resistance headquarters destroyed. Rourke considered that now as he watched the man, studying Natalia's forged documents, peering into the car, a flashlight in his right hand, the beam high, trained on Natalia's face.
Major Tiamarovna!
Rourke made a decision. He wrenched the LTD's door handle, slamming the door hard outward against the abdomen of the KGB non-com. Rourke reached out of the car, stepping half out of the driver's seat. His left hand moved toward the military flap holster on the man's belt, and his right grabbed for the papers. He had them all. As he held the pistol outwards, Rourke stuffed the papers into the pocket of his borrowed overcoat. He pointed the pistol at the KGB non-com's face. The mouth was open, about to shout for aid. He threw the emptied pistol beside the dead man, and without closing the door, he stomped the accelerator. The open door whacked against the side of the barricade. He threw the hat out the window as he ducked.
Natalia, down!
Gunfire passed through the shattered rear window, spiderwebbing the windshield in front of him. The accelerator was already flat to the floor, the speedometer needle passing 50 and climbing fast. He'd always liked eight-cylinder Fords.
I'm going for the guns!
Rourke shot a glance toward her. He smiled. She had ripped away the scarf that had covered her hair, shaking her head now, freeing her hair the way a wild animal, something untamed, might shake itself at the first taste of freedom. She smiled at him. They both understood what she had done. Death might be imminent. Behind them, motorcycle sidecar combinations were rolling, headlights bouncing as the vehicles accelerated.
Okay, get us some guns. We got friends coming up on the left.
Rourke started steering right, the police car cutting them off. Natalia was at the edge of his peripheral vision. He could see her going over into the back seat to start getting the weapons. The blue and white car was too close. Rourke cut the wheel hard left.
Hang on! Collision!
The right front fender smashed against the right rear fender of the police car. In the rearview mirror, he could see the police car making a high-speed reverse, then turning. The twisted bumper was broken off, and the blue light was flashing from the roof.
Hey, KM, keep low!
He cut sharp right onto a ramp. He didn't know where he was heading. There was no time to look, and Chicago streets were not in his recent memory.
Natalia, are you all right?
The rear end of the Ford fishtailed as he curved the entrance ramp at nearly 50. The Eisenhower Expressway opened up before him, the post office interchange coming up fast. They were passing the post office now. Rourke picked up more blue lights in the rearview mirror.
Natalia!
Yes, I'm all right! They almost have them!
All right, hang on!
He cut the wheel hard left. A police car started toward them, going against the direction of the lanes. But there was no traffic, just abandoned cars flanking the expressway in both lanes on both shoulders. Rourke stomped the accelerator to the floor, shooting an intersection, into the loop now, the police car on a collision course with them. The police car suddenly swerved, its windshield shattered. The police car accelerated, but Rourke cut a sharp right to miss it. In the rear view, he saw Natalia holding one of her revolvers and the police car crashing into an underpass abutment behind them. Rourke started to edge left, turning toward State Street.
It was made into a shopping mall. It could be cut off.
He cut back right.
Backseat driver!
And he instead took the next left on Wabash. Four police cars were coming down Wabash against him. He cut left at Jackson Boulevard, heading against the flow of traffic, had there been any traffic. A one-way street, the signs half down but still visible.
That's just as well. High speed on Wabash with the elevated train platform. Suicide!
And he stumped the gas pedal, crossing State, Dearborn, heading west, the city empty, ghostly, one out of every 10 or so streetlights burning. Rourke guessed the Russians had gotten power restored to at least parts of the city, but the street lamps were mostly shot out or otherwise shattered, it seemed, as he sped under them. Natalia was back beside him now.
The rest of our gear, it's in the back seat. Here.
She handed him a pistol, one of the little Detonic stainless 45s. She knew what he liked, he thought.
Chambers loaded, hammer down.
Rourke rammed the pistol into his belt, ripping open the overcoat buttons, swerving to avoid the body of a dead dog. And suddenly behind him, there was a pack. The animals were running after the car, the police cars two blocks back, not frightening them off. Rourke swerved close to a curb to avoid a wrecked car in the middle of the street. Suddenly, a huge dog leapt toward the truck from the roof of an abandoned car. It was on the hood, foam dripping from its mouth.
Shoot, for God's sake!
He looked to his right. Already, she was leaning out the passenger side window, one of her revolvers in her right hand. The dog showed its big teeth at the windshield, somehow balancing itself on the hood. The dog's head seemed to explode. Blood and gray material coated the windshield. He found the windshield wiper switch, only one wiper blade in front of the driver's side. The other blade was bare metal. He punched the washer button on the wiper control switch, but there was nothing.
Ah, shit!
The blood and brain matter were smeared now like grease, all but obscuring the windshield. He kept the wiper blade going, hoping to at least scrape some of the mess away. More police cars came into view, closing from the streets he crossed, falling in, almost like a formation, behind those already in pursuit. Rourke turned right onto Wacker Drive, accelerating, police cars behind him now. But still, nothing ahead. The Civic Opera House. He'd given a lecture there once, he recalled. Police cars were now blocking the street ahead of him.
Did you ever block out the underground below Wacker Drive?
No, we couldn't leave workers down there. The brigands, some of their bodies. They were eaten partially, arms cut off and legs. And our pathologist said it wasn't dogs who had done it. It was people.
That may be a blessing in disguise.
Rourke cut the wheel hard left, half bouncing over a lip of concrete curb. The car fishtailed and dove into the blackness of the underground.